Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting...
Let him play!
Down 21-0 in the fourth quarter, they kicked a field goal. Fire everybody. Disband the program.
Oh yeah, another clank by Carmelo. Oh, that poor Porzingis!
Clank.
I like that, Dave. I'm in foreclosure because I lost my arch.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you back here in the city. From the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California, I am a little rusty. Hopefully, you guys are hanging in there this summer. Glad to have the summer with us, and glad to have you with us here on this program. Well, it's been a while. It's been about 2 months since the last show, and it is probably the first time we've had an extended break from the program, and I want to thank you for all your support through the years. And I'll tell you this, what happened was basically just an opportunity for me to just take a break, and I wasn't really planning it that way. I was just like, okay, we did the show with Biebs for the NFL draft. I'm like, all right, we'll take a week off. And we've been taking weeks off during this year, too. Like, even before this hiatus, we were taking weeks off. I'm like, okay, there's not much going on. We'll wait a week, and then we'll wait, and then we'll do this the next week. And then we did it again, and then we did it again, and then we did it again. And then all of a sudden, I was like, well, oh, wow, I got something going. Wow, I missed this one. And then I was like, well, I could do a show or I could just kind of relax for a while. Things have been getting pretty busy at work, so that's why I didn't have as much time to prepare for the podcast like I normally would have. It's just a different world. I mean, I'm at a job where I take value in my work, and further, I'm still learning some of the ropes. So put it all together, I didn't have as much time to plan out some of the guests and some of the topics, and as you may expect, any podcast requires a certain amount of preparation, and some less than others, and to do this appropriately, you know, you don't want to just go in there and just start talking. Like, you do want a good topic, you want good people to talk about the topic, and you also want to have the energy to do it. And I don't think all three of those are lining up for the last 2 months. So I figured it may be better just to give it a rest. It didn't seem like there was much demand anyway. No one even noticed it was off the air. So we decided to just give it some time. And then with each week, we just took it week by week. We were like, well, let's see. We could talk about the finals, but they haven't been a very good finals. So we decided we'll just not bother with it this week again. And we just kept going like that until we reached the golf preview. And I was a little concerned that this would happen because I was thinking, well, that golf preview is weeks away. I mean, shouldn't I do something to at least give our audience a taste of the program? But it honestly just didn't happen, and it doesn't seem like anyone really minded. But for those who have always enjoyed the show, yeah, we're happy to be back. And not that anyone even came to this conclusion, but it was nothing really more than that. It was just simply just a desire to take some time away and do other things and really absorb the sports that we cover here on this program and do other stuff, you know, like go on trips and whatever. And some of those weeks I was on vacation, and other times I was just simply too busy. So it was nice to be able to do those things, and now we're back, and we certainly have had things to talk about in the last 2 months, but it's stuff that has been covered by everybody already. I mean, the NBA Finals is a good example. The playoffs were terrible in the NBA. Playoffs are great in the NHL. That would have been a good topic, but I was having more fun watching these games, and it was just crazy. Like, there was a lot going on. So I was just honing in on that. And all the while, I was thinking ahead about the football season and getting prepared for that. I started a new fantasy team with the captain, which we talked about already, but our team's doing pretty well. You know, it started off terribly, but we just hit 500. We're now a game under 500, but I think we can bounce back this week and get back to 500 again. We have a good team. It's just that, you know, things were in line and guys were not hitting at the plate, you know, stuff like that. And then in the personal arena, I think things are good. You know, my friends have been going through some ups and downs, and I don't want to get into too much detail, but, you know, definitely there were hugs to be had for certain friends of mine lately. And, gosh, even an example today, but I won't go into details on it. But, you know, you know, my thoughts certainly with my buddy today. But some good news in the middle of that, too. I won't go into detail again, but there's been a lot going on, and I'm just blessed that I've been okay. Like, I've been fine. I'm doing fine. I'm healthy. I don't really have any major illnesses to report. I'm just happy to be alive, and I'm happy to have my health. I'm happy to have a nice job, and I think things are going well so far in 2017. So I think with the break, it really gave me a chance to reflect on all that, and it made me miss our friend the Junkman too. We would exchange texts every so often, and oh yeah, I had one for him today. I forgot to text this to him, but we do exchange random questions off the air. It's funny. And I had one, and I can't remember what it was, but I was in the shower, and I thought of it, and now I can't remember what it was. So I'm trying to think. It was something like, if you could name a player, what was the something with a team? And I'm trying to remember, and I can't remember. That's really a bummer, because it was a good question. Like, I'm trying to remember it now. And I was trying to think, I'll come up with it later. But so we're here, and then in a, you know, movies, as far as movies, I got to see a couple of good movies. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is a great movie. Wonder Woman was a kick-ass movie too, and I had a lot of fun with those. And so now, you know, we're here. I get to talk a little bit of golf. As for the NBA, you know, it's pretty much honestly, if you really look back, and it's kind of what I expected. I mean, this team, the Golden State Warriors with Durant, they're just so good. Like, you know, what do you want? What do you want? Like, if they're really as good as these players have been projected and have been known to be, what else was going to happen in the playoffs? Like, these guys were beating around everybody. And, yeah, I mean, they went out and they beat the Cavs in 5 games. And they should have beat the Cavs in 5 games. The Cavs had terrible defense, and LeBron played a wonderful series, but, you know, what else can you really do when you don't have the supporting players, especially from the bench? They had no bench. I mean, yeah, you could play LeBron like 50 minutes, and you could play Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving like 45 minutes, but if you don't have a bench, and you're relying on guys like J.R. Smith, I still don't think he's that good. And, you know, he had a good game in the beginning of Game 5, then he gave way and stuff like that. So, you know, if you're just not that good a team, you're not going to win an NBA Finals. I mean, they were good last year. LeBron was special. They had big performances for multiple players. But this year, they just didn't have that. And they didn't have the bench support behind it. And so, you know, You put that together with teams that are on the way out, like Toronto. You put that into teams that aren't ready yet, like you know, like Utah is a good example. And then you've got an NBA playoffs that happened to be one of the worst in decades. Like, it was bad. It was bad. You had bad breaks. You had Kawhi Leonard blowing out his ankle, re-injuring his ankle, basically, during Game 1 in the Western Conference Finals against the Warriors. And that killed the game. Like, the Warriors came all the way back. They were up by, I think the Spurs were up like 25 points. And the Warriors came all the way back and won. And I'm like, yeah, yep, that's about what I thought. You know, it's pretty much a lot of that. So, with that on the table, you know, you look at the offseason, it's actually a pretty exciting offseason. And unlike a lot of people, casual NBA fans who only watch during the playoffs, and there are a lot of those guys out there, unlike a lot of people, I think the NBA has a good future ahead of them. It's just that a lot of teams are kind of reaching that Venn diagram situation where you know, some teams were just not that good and they were past their prime, and other teams were and other teams had their chances, like the Clippers, for example, and they're over the hill. And so, oh no, I'm sorry. The other category was teams that were just not ready for prime time yet, like really young teams. So then we mentioned Utah, we mentioned some teams. Anybody in the East? Maybe the no, not the Pacers. The Pacers are in the other category, but stuff like that. And then I think that put together, created this whole thing with the NBA playoffs this year. So that put to bed. We now turn our attention to golf, and in the golf, the day was Brooks Koepka's. He was fantastic. I mean, you're talking about a guy that really was pretty consistent, and he took a really, really stacked leaderboard where everybody was minus eight for a short period of time on Saturday, and he just kept going. Everybody else kept pace through the third round, into the final round on Sunday, through the first seven or eight holes. But then by the 14th hole, Koepka had a birdie and it on a par five, and that pretty much put it away. I mean, for all intents and purposes, he had that thing iced. And it's too bad for Hideki Matsuyama, because he had a nice birdie to finish his round, but he just ran out of holes. Like, he was minus 12, and he couldn't do anything about it. So that was that. But a great, pretty good U.S. I'm not going to say great, but I would say pretty good U.S. Open overall. And for more details on that, we now join our golf panel once again. Mike in North Jersey and John in Connecticut. We'll introduce them one by one. We start with Mike. Mike, welcome back to the program. Hopefully the Skype is on its game tonight. How's it going, Mike?
Well, Dave, I'm just getting over the reveal of the new NHL uniforms, and I'm not particularly happy about the Devils uniform, but if they can make the playoffs or win or do something positive in the next few years, I won't really give a shit. So I've been kind of looking at that. quick thoughts on the U.S. Open. I don't think anyone's surprised that Brooks Koepka won, even though he's only won once on tour, which is really kind of shocking. But if you look at it, you know, he had that win at the 2015 Waste Management Open, and he kind of looked like a star doing that. And then I think we were all almost waiting for this to happen, and, you know, he improved. If you look at his results in majors, it just seemed like he was kind of creeping up. Now, I know last year he did have an ankle injury that kept him out for a couple months. That might have contributed to the lack of total wins. But, you know, an interesting story. It's a bit of a late bloomer there with Koepka. You know, played his college golf at Florida State. Then he went over to the European Tour to try to, you know, break in that way, which, you know, I thought was an interesting idea. You know, most of these American golfers, you know, they come from relatively prestigious backgrounds, and they usually have the financial support where they can go around the mini tours, or they can, you know, rent a motorhome, drive around to the web.com tour. But no, this guy went into the Challenge Tour, which is like the European Tour's version of the web.com tour, graduated from that, then won a couple times on the European Tour, and that's basically how he got over to the PGA Tour. So interesting road he's taken. A guy very much in the Dustin Johnson mold, I guess we can say, of golfers. So no surprise there. But, you know, I thought the tournament overall was a bit of a dud, to be honest with you. I mean, it had its moments. Yeah, the Justin Thomas 63, and then, you know, Koepka's ball striking in the final round, 17 to 18 greens, and, you know, what was not easy conditions in that final round. So that was just a superb performance. But, we'll get into some of the issues later on in the show, but I do think the USGA kind of made a mistake here. But, you know, we could get more into that later.
All right, Mike, let's go to John and introduce him to our program. John, good to have you back. How's it going tonight?
Doing good, Dave. Thanks for having me back on. Just kind of chilling and, you know, living life, I guess. We haven't talked in a while, so. I mean, I guess if you want me just to go right into some initial thoughts, you know, I would agree overall with Mike's comments. I mean, it was a pretty ho-hum open. I mean, I know the leaderboard was pretty packed there at one point, but Koepka kind of just took over on the back nine. A couple guys made some mistakes with some three putts, especially Harmon and then Fowler fell apart, which I guess is becoming par for the course with him in these big events towards the down the stretch. But and he was very impressive. Tied this all-time scoring record for the U.S. Open, minus 16. Again, we can kind of get into how I guess legitimate that is as we go on here. But you know, you can't deny his physical talent and ability that's finally kind of showed itself here. What we were, like Mike said, you know, we were kind of expecting a performance like this to happen for a while at one of these big events, and you know, it happened here at Erin Hills. And you know, I read an interesting story that he turned to golf because he had an injury that forced him to stop playing another sport. I want to say it was baseball, but I could be wrong. And I guess at first, but I definitely know it was he was interested in playing another sport, and because of an injury, he had to focus on golf. And at first, he wasn't really all that thrilled, I guess, to play golf. And you know, what a career it's turned out to be for him. He's a multimillionaire and now the U.S. Open champion. So hats off to him. And you know, we'll get into some more of the details of the event in the show.
Yeah, let's in starting these details. I mean, we can start by looking at what's been happening with the rest of the field. And Mike, actually, I think you hit on it right on. Like, I think what you were missing, not only were you missing the drama, especially on the back nine, but you're missing the stars. And you know, I know we don't normally jump into this so quickly, but you go to surprises and disappointments. I mean, you talk about guys who are a big disappointment. Three major players, Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, and Rory McIlroy, all missed a cut at the same time on Saturday. I mean, once you take that out of the equation, Jordan Spieth wasn't that good. You mentioned Ricky Fowler. I mean, many of the big names that we have come to know and love in golf did not really play much of a factor towards the end of this tournament. I mean, Koepka is a pretty good player. Like you mentioned it. This is just a matter of time. No less than Dustin Johnson when he won the U.S. when he won his major, it was only a matter of time as well. So and even Sergio Garcia was a matter of time, although that for a much longer period of time. But nevertheless, you're talking about everybody else. Like, it just wasn't the cachet that we've been used to. So I tend to be with you on that. Your thoughts on how the field played out?
Well, to start off, you had 8 of the top 12 players in the world miss the cut at this event.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, that is just
it's crazy.
Staggering. That's really, it's unbelievable. Now, was this a combination of a course setup or a course not fitting the players, or did they all just have bad weeks? I'm not really sure, and we're never really going to find out because they don't come back here every year, and you know, we're never going to really know what exactly caused it. Probably a little bit of both, to be honest. So 8 of 12 don't make the cut, and then of course the big 3 don't make the cut. So really it takes a lot of juice out of the event. Now, you know, the big golf fans are still going to watch, still going to be into it. Like, John and I still know who all these, well, pretty much who all these guys are who are in the mix, but for casual golf fans, this is not good news. I know the TV ratings weren't good, but apparently the digital ratings were good. So now that's becoming the thing. You look at what are you watching through, and more people are watching through those mediums now. But yeah, just, you know, McIlroy, it's not shocking. If McIlroy were healthy, I would go on a rant against him tonight. But, you know, we have to assume that he was just coming off an injury, so kind of a pass there. Dustin Johnson has not been the same, really, since the Masters, quote, falling down the stairs incident, which who really knows what happened there. And, my God. And, you know, Jason Day might want to tear up that Nike contract because he's been atrocious ever since he's switched over to the Nike apparel. Now, I know he's not playing the clubs, and, you know, it's really not the reason why he's struggling, but it's just an odd coincidence. But he's not doing anything. But just 8 of the top 12, I mean, that's staggering. I mean, who are the A-listers really on this? You know, I guess Koepka, Matsuyama. Now, you look, that's not a bad top two. But then you go down, Brian Harman, Tommy Fleetwood, Xander Schauffele. I don't even know who Xander Schauffele is, to be honest.
Wow.
I've never heard of the guy.
Like, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, Mike said, oh, we know all the guys in the leaderboard. That is the one guy I've literally never heard of. And I play the fantasy golf every week. I've never heard of Xander Schauffele, so... You know, kudos to him for getting the top 5.
Yeah, no doubt. Guys, if you're saying that you don't know these guys, then people really don't know these guys, because you guys are good on the game. So that's definitely startling. anyway, continuing the thought, it really has been, it's been kind of crazy. And you know, I'm gonna take this in another direction. We mentioned the course setup, and I'm gonna mirror a point that John made on Twitter. I was surprised at these scores, because usually this is supposed to be the hardest course in of the majors, and usually you end up with scores right around par, like, you know, plus one, plus two, minus one, minus two. We're looking at, like, minus 18, minus 17, minus 20, I mean, not minus 20, but minus 12. I mean, everybody was, like, well under par, and it was very unusual to see that. So we'll give it back to John for a second, comment on the course, and then Mike for the same comment.
I think one thing you have to realize here, it's a par 72, which I believe it's the first time they played on a par 72 at the U.S. Open in like 20-something years.
Mm-hmm.
So since there's those two extra par 5, the scores are going to be a little bit lower. I mean, I get that, because you have two, the way these guys hit the ball at their length, it literally doesn't matter. You saw on Saturday, Justin Thomas hit three wood, and he's 8 feet away from the hole, 700 yards. I mean, the length does not matter to these players. So that definitely played a role, having those extra par fives in the low scoring. But having said that, these fairways, they were so wide. I mean, you'd have to be so bad and so off your game to miss these fairways. And in addition to that, you had the rain. So under normal, fast and firm conditions, okay, a shot that might be a little bit off that would be in the fairway but would run off into the rough, now it was just, there was no roll in the fairways, and you guys saw this. When the ball hit the fairway, it just literally stopped. It was not running into the fescue. The only way you hit a shot into the tall grass is if you completely hooked it or sliced it. And for a professional golfer, you might have that happen once or twice a round if you're playing well. And you know, obviously you didn't see Koepka do that at all, because his ball striking was just impeccable. So I really thought the low scoring took away from the event. I mean, coming into this year, I believe you only had four or five guys ever to reach double digits under par in the U.S. Open. And this week alone, seven guys finished double digits under par. And I'm sure a number of others might have gotten there and fallen back. I mean, I just didn't think I don't know what more the USGA could have done. I think they did cut the rough earlier in the week, which I think that was a mistake. They kind of cut the fescue. But again, like I said, the fairways were so wide, it took, you would literally have to be like a hack, like an amateur hack, to hit it into that stuff. And, you know, some of the top players in the world, like Mike had mentioned, they did look like hacks out there. If you watch Rory McIlroy and Jason Day on Thursday afternoon, they looked awful. It's just mind-boggling that those two guys, like Jason Day would shoot 8 over on this course, while Ches Reavie shoots 7 under 65. And I'm not trying to, you know, discredit him, but I mean, come on here. This is a little ridiculous. Jason, it's just the contrast between those two players, and one guy is shooting 65 and the other is shooting 78. It's just, I don't get it. So I agree. I give McIlroy a pass on this one. Day, he's had some family issues all year. His mind is not right. But I was very surprised about Dustin Johnson. I mean, this course was made for him. You bomb it long, and his wedge game was perfect, and he just couldn't get anything going. So, you know, I guess, like I said, I was not a fan of all these low scores, but I mean, the course looked nice. I guess I could say that. It's some interesting holes, but I definitely think either they should make some of those par fives a par four for next time if they're going to play here again. I mean, I don't know what they could do, but I was definitely not a fan of the, you know, 16 under winning and seven guys double digits under par. Honestly, I'll make a prediction. This weekend, the Travelers Championship in my backyard, the winning score might not even be 16 under. Last year, it was 14 under. So that could have a higher winning score than the U.S. Open, which is just ridiculous. I like to have the U.S. Open. Like, I don't like it when it's like 7 or 8 over where it was that one year. I believe it was either Oakmont or Winged Floor. One of those courses was like ridiculously over par, but you know, give me 2 or 3 under winning the tournament. I mean, I'll take that. So, and those are my rambling thoughts on the course.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I look forward to in the U.S. Open as well. I mean, I love the challenge. I think that those can present some of the best moments And it makes it unique, too. So a little disappointing from that end in my point of view as well. Let's go to Mike for his thoughts on the course.
I don't want to completely kill this course. I mean, yeah, it seemed like it was a good venue, but it just the setup was a little bit weird. You know, it's almost like you had to treat the fescue like it was a lateral hazard. But, you know, you could get lucky. Like, if you bashed it way left or way right, you could hit to the trampled down area, and then you'd be fine. So it was just a little bit quirky with that. I thought the bunkering, the way that they had, like, some very like, the bunkers were very, like, intricate. They had a lot of, you know, curves and edges so that you could get stuck in a place where you'd have no stance, really, as opposed to if you hit it in the center of the bunker, you'd be fine. So I thought that was a little bit weird. But the thing that I kind of get on the course on is that it's right in the same neighborhood as Whistling Straits and Black Wolf Run, the river course. Now, both of those courses, you know, I've seen, you know, the women played an event at Black Wolf Run, which was actually a disaster because really none of them could break 80. So that was actually funny. It was a few years ago. I don't know why I didn't bring it up, but getting back on topic here. And of course, we've seen Whistling Straits. So just to me, it's like they chose the third best course in the, you know, I guess we can call it the greater Milwaukee or southern Wisconsin area to host the course, which I don't really get. Now, I know the USGA had their sights on Whistling Straits, but Pete Dye kind of came in and said, you won't really have the growing season or however, whenever it gets warm there to be able to control it well enough to set up for an open. Now, maybe that's what happened here. Same idea, because they said, you know, it was raining more and then the fescue got way too thick underneath, so they had to clear it out. And then, as John mentioned, you know, the rain making the fairways effectively play wider because the only way you got into the fescue is if you flew it in. But it just seemed to me that, you know, it rained, but it didn't rain that much. Like at Congressional when it was soft, I mean, it was basically raining every day for a month up until that tournament, and we all knew what was going to happen. Or at least we had, they got soaked that week maybe, because I think the week or, you know, I'm mixing up my history. It was either a week or a month before Congressional started getting absolutely soaked with rain. This place got a couple inches. It wasn't like, even Marion, like in 2013, there was more rain there that week and the course was still tough. Now, I don't know if defending par is such a necessity, but it just created this effect and feel like it didn't really feel like a U.S. Open where you were grinding over every shot, knowing that like the slightest error can completely throw you off and each hole can be a disaster. It wasn't really like that. You know, if you hit a decent shot, you're going to be okay. So that's what it felt like to me. I don't know why there was such a wide dispersion among the scores. That was a little bit odd to me. So just, you know, maybe I think John has a good idea. If you want to come back to this place, you probably got to play at least as a par 71. You can't play it as a par 72 because I don't care how long they make that 18th hole or how long they listed on the yardage card, because all you got to do is cut the dog leg and it's downhill and they can reach the green in two. So, you know, it might say 700 yards, but it's effectively five something. So I don't know, maybe a few setup tweaks or whatever. Now, you have some of the players saying the course was great. You had Chambly saying the course was great. Yeah, I think part of it is the players don't really like playing, you know, more traditional U.S. Opens where they have to grind over every shot because, you know, let's face it, it's tough, and they don't really like that. And if a regular tour event tries to do something like that, the players stop coming, and, you know, eventually they have to ease off of it. So I think that's part of it. You know, it wasn't terrible, but, you know, it just felt like there were some things lacking here for not just the course, but just the event in general.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. I will also say that it did remind me of Whistling Straits, and so that's probably lent to some more of my surprise that the scores were so low, because I was thinking of Whistling Straits and how much tougher that course was comparatively, even though they're very similar features. So it's hard to say at this point. You know, maybe the air has something to do with it. You mentioned some of the points already. I won't go over them again. But yeah, for whatever reason, it just seemed to play a lot easier than one would expect for this kind of a tournament. On the broadcast, I think the broadcast is an improvement over past years that of Fox U.S. Open broadcasts. I don't know what that really says, but I do think that they've been doing a little bit better in that area. I think that one lady that was doing the interviews, I forgot her name. I think she's out of the picture now because I didn't see her during this broadcast at all. And I guess Joe Buck does the play-by-play to some extent now, which I think is unfortunate because he does not have a golf voice. I mean, everybody else that I know that does golf, from even going back through the years, like you talk about, like Pat Summerall, he has a special golf version of his voice where he can be a little bit softer and he can, give a little touch to the moment. And we all know that Jim Nantz is really good at that because he loves golf and he brings a little touch to the moment. But Joe Buck does the same voice for everything. And it's just a bit annoying. And I don't really, I know he's trying. I don't necessarily think he's doing a bad job, but the voice does not a fit for golf, no less than Berman was a voice for golf. So that part's always been disappointing to me. I mean, he just does not have any nuance or subtlety to his broadcasting style, which is always going to be a reason why people never really put him in the upper echelon in terms of, like, long-term legends of broadcasting. Maybe that's just me, but I certainly don't think that it was a fit. And I'm not saying he's a bad broadcaster. He's not. But, I mean, it's just not a fit for golf. So that's my only comment as far as the broadcast. We'll give it to the rest now for their comments on the Fox telecast of the Open. So let's go to John first and get your thoughts on how the broadcast went in your opinions.
Yeah, the woman doing the interviews, I don't know if she did them last year, Holly Saunders, she's on the Golf Channel, but it seems like every year she gets such more and more like makeup or plastic surgery done. She's looking like Caitlyn Jenner more and more every year. I don't know if you guys saw that, but that's what I felt. But anyway, she did a good job. I'm not going to kill her. That's just her looks. That she's definitely looking more and more like that every year. But anyway, the Fox broadcast is just so weird because we've mentioned this before. They have no announcers in like the tower covering a specific hole. So you'll have Buck and Azinger and Faxon just sitting there taking turns calling the shots for 4 or 5 hours. And then they go to their on-course reporters who did an okay job. I think they're getting better at that, but it's just the way they present it is just very, very strange. And then you had Darren Clark on this year as an analyst, as one of the panelists calling hole. You could barely understand what he was saying with his thick accent. I mean, I'm sure he was making some good points, but he definitely would, need a little broadcasting training before he would, head back again next year. But like I said, it's just so odd the way they called the total holes with Buck and Azinger and Faxon. And I don't know. Azinger to me is just really annoying. I don't know what it is. He's always trying to make something bigger than it is. If I can use that as a phrase, I'm trying to think of an example. It might come to me as I'm talking, but he's just annoying. Some of the things that he was saying. I mean, Buck doesn't bother me that much. I mean, he did have that huge gaffe, though, at the end of the tournament. I don't know if you guys saw that, where Koepka's walking off the green, and, this young lady gives him a hug and a kiss for winning, and then Buck names his ex-girlfriend as the woman that was greeting him. And then, like, 10 minutes later, Brad Faxon says, I'm sorry, Joe, but that was his old, his new girlfriend is actually so-and-so and said the name. And they're like, well, how do you know that? And Faxon's like, well, I'm up on all the tour gossip or something. So that was like a pretty embarrassing moment for Joe Buck.
Oh, boy.
He was probably looking at his Wikipedia page had not been updated correctly. But that's got to be pretty embarrassing for the ex-girlfriend, too, to have been named. And, they're not together anymore. But I thought that was kind of funny. But overall, in terms of him, I mean, he is what he is. I mean, I don't think he's the worst. I think they could have gotten worse. I mean, I think the first year they had Kurt Menefee on here. I mean, he was brutal.
Oh, man.
I mean, Buck certainly doesn't go to that level. But I guess they're getting better at it, but there's just the whole thing with them not having announcers on the specific holes just really bugs me for whatever reason.
Interesting observation. Yeah, we've talked about that before. They just seem to think that one group of announcers for the entirety of the event is enough. But if you're not actually at the hole, I don't think your perspective on it is as good. So that's why I think over time, networks have put people at the holes because you get a better read on like what's actually happening. Otherwise, you're just commenting on it based on what the TV angles are. And that could be enough, but I mean, you guys would know this more than I would, whether that's sufficient enough to provide a decent play-by-play. Anyway, let's go to Mike and get your thoughts, Mike, on the telecast.
Well, I'll say first off that it is tremendously improved from where we started with in year one. Because the first year, let's be honest, that was a complete disaster. I mean, from just not having any clue how to run a golf broadcast in every aspect possible. You know, the commentary was terrible. The camera angles and the shots the first year where they were so zoomed in on where the ball would land that you'd have no clue where it was in perspective to the hole. Now, that's all gotten better. But yeah, there are still some issues. I mean, let's be honest with Buck. It's not that terrible because he kind of knows his role a little bit and realizes, hey, I don't really know enough about golf to talk that much. So he doesn't really say much. But then he just comes in with like a canned segue or a canned intro line or a canned outro line. And it just seems all so forced. And you can tell, like, he's going over, like, a list of back-to-back U.S. Open champions. So he mentions, like, or it might have been, like, three-time champions or something. So he just goes, okay, well, we have Ben Hogan, we have Tiger Woods, and then we have Smith and Anderson. Now, Smith and Anderson refers to Willie Anderson and Alex Smith, who are two guys from the early 1900s. You can't call them Smith and Anderson and not give like a background story. You can't say Smith and Anderson like it's Hogan and Jones or Hogan and Nicholas. No one knows who the fuck you're talking about. So at least give us a little bit of background info. And let's throw out a last name. Oh, Vardon. Well, people should know who Harry Vardon is, but you know, the people. Well, Tiger was out, so they wouldn't be watching anyway. So forget that point. But yeah, and I just thought it was pretty funny that like Buck goes on Dan Patrick's show like the next day after that, and then basically throws like his producers and the people behind the scenes under the bus for the girlfriend gaffe. I mean, you made the mistake. Take ownership of it. You're the last line of defense. If you think, hey, let's make sure this is correct, you know, you can get on your phone and Google the fucking thing, Joe, so don't give me that. And, you know, John's right about Azinger. He always tries to turn, like, a situation into some, like, checkpoint or some kind of fork in the road or something about a player's mental state. It's like, no, it's just a golf shot. Don't try to get that deep. And I think John brought this up last year, and he's right, because I really noticed it this year, that Azinger does not really give you much about the act, like, actually what's going on. He just talks about the mental side of the game constantly. And once you like start focusing on that, he becomes really annoying. So I get where he's coming from there. Good parts of the broadcast, Gil Hans again. For a guy who's a golf course architect, I don't know how he became so articulate and able to present his ideas very well. So you can probably see why he gets a lot of business. But good job out of him. Holly Saunders, yeah, her role's been reduced. She's kind of pointless anyway. They just bring her, they just swing it back for like an interview or something with her. Or not even interview. She basically just like, you know, segues it into another announcer and asks them questions because her interview with Spieth just got her kicked off. And Darren Clark, you know, I actually thought he did a good job the first few days. But then they, like, on the last day, he seemed like he was drunk because he was talking about Matsuyama and talked about how he had figured out his putting. And it's like, Darren, what are you talking about? Matsuyama can't putt for shit. Like, he's like, no, but he's figured it out this year. Yes, he has, lads. I'm just like, no, well, like, what are you watching? And sure enough, Matsuyama like misses like a 5-foot putt. And you know, the first time they went to that, the first time they went to that alternate desk, I'm like, did the coverage fail? And are they like, they giving us the RTE coverage in Ireland or something? It's O'Donoghue and Darren Clark. So it's just Irish brogue all over the place. It makes you want to get a beer and drink. So I'm not bad with that. And then the other thing I found real interesting was when they didn't, when like they needed the second desk to take a break, they just brought in these writers who are not really TV people. They brought in Shane Bacon, who was good on TV, and they had Alan Shipnick, and I forget who the third guy was, but they would just like bring in this panel of writers. It's like, where are you guys coming from? Don't you have to be doing your own stories? How do you even have time for this? So that's a little bit odd. So they're getting better, but they're still pretty lost. I mean, just, you know, all you got to do is watch the Golf Channel on the weekdays and watch CBS on the weekends. That should pretty much give you your idea of how to run it. But what do I know?
Yeah, John, you had a follow up.
No, I was saying those two reporters, he's absolutely right. I've heard of Shupnik, but that other guy, I've literally never heard of in my life. And he's out here lecturing to me about how I should think about this golf tournament. Hey, buddy, I've never heard of you before. I don't know. It was just very, very odd.
Yeah, that seems to reek of a CBS Sports Minute. Telling people what to think about sports. Yeah, sounds very hot takey. I missed out on that, but I think these are very good comments by both of you as far as the telecast. So that puts it to bed. Really not a lot to say about this year's tournament. I mean, usually we do a feature called Surprises and Disappointments, but what kind of surprises could there have been, really? I mean, there was an amateur that ended up lasting fairly long. That was good. You know, Koepka isn't necessarily a surprise because we already know he's a good golfer. So I don't really know where I would even go with that. So we'll just give it to Mike and just get some final thoughts regarding this particular tournament and the U.S. Open at Erin Hills in 2017.
Well, just a real quick segue before I get into that. You know, do you wonder, does the USGA come back now and makes Shinnecock next year impossible? But I guess we could probably get into that a little bit later. It wouldn't surprise me if they do that. Surprises, disappointments. Well, I think we already covered the disappointments.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Surprises. Well, do we want to go the relative success of amateurs? I mean, if you look at it, it's not just this tournament. It's all over. You're seeing amateurs now. Like, let's look at Jon Rahm, for example. For these guys turn pro, and they're already so polished, and they're ready to win. So, you know, maybe Jordan Spieth was right. You know, he made the comment, I think 2 years ago, that he thought an amateur was going to win a major like within the next 10 years or maybe even 5 years. He might be right about that because, you know, this Cameron Champ, I mean, wasn't he leading the field in driving distance, I think, at one point, or he was close? I mean, the guy can hit the ball with anyone. We'll see what he becomes because obviously there's more to the game than doing that. I don't know what to make of Siwoo Kim either because the guy's underlying numbers are terrible. But if this guy were an American or even a European, or if he was white, basically, and not a Oriental, excuse me, wait. No. You shouldn't be offended by the use of Oriental. Think how I think. But no, if he wasn't Asian and he spoke English well, there would be no... They wouldn't stop talking about this guy because he's 21. He just won the Players' Championship, and... You know, he was in contention. He had a terrible Sunday with the 75, but he was in contention here, so he might be a big-game hunter. So let's keep your eyes on him. You know, he definitely deserves the attention now. You win the Players, and then you do well in the U.S. Open. You're only 21. So, yeah. Surprises, disappointment. Is it? This isn't really a surprise. It's more of a we expected this. Now, would you expect anything else different from Johnny Miller to come on and basically bash Justin Thomas's 63 on Saturday? He just goes, it's just such a Johnny Miller move. I guess we can say maybe that was a big surprise of the tournament. It was Thomas going that low. I mean, I didn't see a 9 under 63. That's just ridiculous. Was the final round that surprising for him? He should have done a little bit better, but we've said this many times on this show before. It's hard to back up a great round like that with another good round. So not shocking there. He was kind of too far out of it anyway, really, going into the weekend. Steve Stricker's weekend, maybe, you know, for nostalgia's sake, that was nice. A pair of 69s on the weekend for the Wisconsin native. After the USGA declined to give him a exemption into the tournament, he went out, he qualified, and then had a nice showing, so good job for him. Patrick Reed, two good rounds in, which is, it's been a terrible year for Patrick Reed. He has one top 10 all season. So I don't know what's going on with him, but a tie for 13th here, disappointing Sunday, but maybe he's getting things back on track here. Tommy Fleetwood, you know, Tommy Fleetwood, he's been around for a while, but he's still a young guy. So I don't know, a big hitter, but pay attention to him. I don't know how much we're really going to see from him. Other than that, surprise, well, we already talked about Xander Schauffele. We have no clue. No one has a clue who he is. So I guess maybe that's your surprise of the tournament there. Oh, Trey Mullinax, we got to give him a shout out. Making his pro debut, I believe, was college teammates with Justin Thomas and finished tied ninth. So good job out of him.
Cool. That's actually a pretty good list. So thanks for that, Mike. Very nice rundown. I think we have a very rare moment where a player in a tournament can be both a surprise and a disappointment, and that would have been Justin Thomas in a way, because, you know, he had a great round. But like you said, it probably was not a surprise to see him, you know, let down the next round. I mean, that is, it's kind of like bowling. Like, when you bowl really well in one game, your second game, you're probably not going to be as good. I mean, like, if you bowl like 280 in bowling, you think you're going to do 280 again the next round? Probably not. So I hear you there on that. What's the highest you've ever bowled, John, Mike? Out of curiosity, I mean, as well, throw that out there.
I don't think I've seriously bowled since I was like 10 years old. Oh. So I don't even know.
All right, no problem. Now, Mike, I imagine you must have been on the board recently to make that comment about the Oriental scenario. Yeah, boy. Yeah, I'm not even gonna go there.
Do we really even want to get into this?
No way. Don't. No. I don't. No. But I just wanted to. Yeah, because it's not worth my time to even get into this. So let's not. So yeah, John, I don't know if you've been on the board, but you're not missing that much. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I pop in from time to time, and then I see our old or I don't know how you would describe them. I guess alt-right friends. You know. Up to their old tricks, and yeah. That's just about the end of all I can take. But
yeah.
Dave, do you bowl 280? I mean, that's unbelievable.
No, I made that number up. I bowled 180 once.
Okay.
I did 180, but not 280. 280 would have been amazing.
180 is still pretty good. The best I've ever done is probably about like that 175. But I'm very infrequent bowler, I would say.
But, same here. Yep. It's always interesting to ask that question, and like, you know, what's your bowling score? And you'd be surprised at some of the answers. Like, some people are pretty good. So it's a good stuff. Okay, John, let's get your conclusions and other thoughts as far as surprises from the U.S. Open.
Yeah, I guess the one guy we kind of really didn't mention yet is Brian Harman. He had that unbelievable putt on the 18th hole last month in North Carolina to win the Wells Fargo Championship. He drained like a 40 footer for birdie, or else he would have had to go to a playoff with, I believe it was DJ and John Rahm and Pat Perez. That would have been a pretty sick playoff, a four-man playoff. But he's carried that momentum, and he had a really excellent performance. I mean, he had a couple, I want to say he had some three putts on the back nine, or else he would have been right there at the end. Was very impressed, especially on a course that long. I mean, the guy is only 5'7". And he's one of the shortest hitters on tour. I was watching the event with my dad, and he's like, oh, this guy's like the modern-day Corey Pavin. And it's pretty much true, just a real small guy that can just kind of maneuver around the course with his shot-making. That was pretty impressive to watch. So a great job, a great performance by him, and he seems like a really just like a tough guy mentally. So I think we'll see him Again, at some of these tougher courses just kind of pop up there. I kind of mentioned before Ricky Fowler. Again, you know, you kind of had hopes for him after that. He was right there after three rounds, and he just couldn't get it done and just had a brutal back nine. So I don't know what it is when he's going to break through and win a major. I mean, he had that Players Championship win, but it's just not happening for him at the end of these tournaments. I mean, he had the top five in all four majors a couple of years ago, but just hasn't translated to big wins in majors. I know he won the Players, but it's a different ball game at the four majors. Let me see who else here. I mean, Mike did a pretty good job running down most of the list. I guess what was not a surprise, we mentioned John Rahm earlier. He just does not have the mental toughness, but he just gets very hot headed when he starts to struggle a little bit. And as easy as this course was playing, you did see some guys just couldn't keep it in check once it kind of snowballed on him. And Rahm was one of them, and he got off to a bad start and just could never recover. So he definitely needs to work on that if he's going to be a world class player. He certainly has all the game, but just not the mental makeup at this point for those kind of events. Let me see who else here was very disappointing. I think we pretty much covered it. I mean, there wasn't anyone that like shot horrible, horrible that we thought was going to do well, other than what we've already mentioned. And we pretty much covered all the surprises. Sergio had a nice tournament, I guess. After winning his first major, he finishes top 20. He's very consistent. I mean, he's always going to be very rarely you see Sergio play like Jason Day and how Rory McIlroy played for those first 2 days. I mean, Sergio, even in his off weeks, he's still in the top 30s. He's just such a consistent player. See who else here. Fleetwood, Mike mentioned his home. They said his home course is Birkdale, where they're playing the Open next month. So maybe he could be kind of a sneaky pick. And, Brendan Steele, he was the guy that Azinger, he chipped in. I think it was on maybe the second hole he chipped in for an eagle on one of those holes, the first couple holes. And Azinger is like, watch out for this guy. He could walk in and steal this. And then you never see another shot for him the rest of the round. It's just stuff like that. It's just so over the top. It's just ridiculous. That's why Azinger annoys me. He makes one shot and got to like 8 under or something and was like 5 or 6 back of the lead. And Azinger is just like, we better watch out for this guy. He could go in and steal it. And I don't think Fox showed another shot the rest of the round. So that's pretty much it with him. So I think that's pretty much it for surprises and disappointments at this event. So that's pretty much it, Dave.
All right. I think that'll put the wrapper on the U.S. Open this year. A good tournament. I mean, not great, but you know, what could you really do when most of the guys at the top of the U.S. I mean, at the top of the world golf rankings aren't even in the thing by the final round. So I mean, not much to work with. So we look ahead and let's go to Mike for what's coming up on the pro golf schedule.
Well, I'll give John the Travelers Championship to talk about because it's local to him and he got some big names playing this year. But, coming up, we obviously have the Open in a few weeks at Birkdale, which was the last time they played. It was when Harrington won, right? And scores were pretty tough, I believe. So
yeah, I want to say it was over par the last time he won it.
Yeah, I believe so, too. So we get that, and we get the PGA at Quail Hollow, which we know because it was normally on the Wells Fargo. That's normally the host of the Wells Fargo Championship. And just to make a quick point here, among the new courses we've seen, they played the Wells Fargo at that course in Wilmington, which I can't remember the name of right now. Someone maybe Google it for me. But that was just an absolutely fantastic course. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing that place host a U.S. Open or a PGA Championship or, you know, at least get into some kind of rotation with Quail Hollow to share the Wells Fargo. Because the course, it was really, it's right on the beach in Wilmington, basically, or steps from the beach. And it kind of has this, like, mix of like Augusta National to it, but obviously not as good, but still quite a course there. I really like that place. What else do we have to look? Well, there are a couple big stories in the world of golf that we haven't touched on. Today, you know, Phil Mickelson and Jim Bones McKay announced a, quote, mutual end to their player-caddy relationship. Now, the speculation immediately was that, you know, Phil's brother Tim Mickelson is going to take over on Phil's bag. Now, he was the golf coach at Arizona State, and then he basically he left when John Rahm turned pro to become his manager, you know, just follow the money. But anyway, the speculation was immediately that Bones was going to take over on Rahm's bag. But then Rahm goes out and he puts a video up on Twitter where he basically says, I'm not firing my caddy, blah, blah, blah. So who knows what's going to happen there. I heard Jim McKay had double knee surgery in the fall or something. Feinstein said on, and who knows, the guy's a blowhard, but he says that he had heard rumblings that this was going to break up. And then, so we'll see where it goes from there. I don't know if Phil was firing him or the guy's leaving. Who knows, really? But then we have to talk about our old friend Tiger Woods. Because, you know, I'm not going to kill him for this because the guy's obviously got a lot of problems. He's probably in pain. And, you know, I knew right away, I saw this video, and I'm like, the guy's on Xanax. And sure enough, he comes out, and he basically, well, they unredacted the Xanax part of the statement. But then Golf Digest, I can't believe they wrote this article. They put out an article like a couple days after this, and this is basically after Tiger admits, no, basically I was fucked up on prescription drugs driving my car. And they come out and they say that this could be, like, some writer comes out, he goes, like, my 24 hours is Tiger Woods. And it's this story where this writer has this rare form of narcolepsy, and he's trying to say that that's what happened to Tiger Woods. And I'm like, I got to find it in my Twitter feed. They probably took it down by now. But this had to be, like, the biggest example of everything that's wrong with how Tiger Woods has been covered. The guy is pulled over. He's obviously intoxicated on something, but they're like, oh, no, he blew 0.0 on the breathalyzer. It's like, well, dude, there are other things you can take that are going to make you like that. It doesn't mean that you have narcolepsy. And he's trying to say that Tiger Woods has this rare form of narcolepsy, which is like 0.0000000. Add another 5 minutes of 0.1% of people are affected by it. Like, it's not what happened. We would have heard that immediately. But it's just like, what are we going to do now? Is the Golf Channel like going to show like live coverage of his DUI like hearing or him pleading guilty? Are we going to say that, oh no, Tiger's good for, is this good for golf? Oh, and then it brings me back to another announcement made today. All suspensions now for performance-enhancing drugs and recreational drugs are going to be made public by the PGA Tour. Now, this has got to ruffle some feathers around here because apparently, you know, positive tests happen a lot more often than you think on the PGA Tour. And the guy just, they don't play, they don't enter the tournaments and nothing's said, or they say they're injured or taking time off. It's happened to Dustin Johnson for cocaine. At least it's very widely speculated or talked about. There are rumors, I don't know if it's true, that Tiger really, that he didn't actually tear his ACL, that he had a more minor knee injury, and they came up with that story to excuse him missing 6 months because he was really being suspended for PEDs or told you have to be off, because the day they put in PED testing was the day after the 2008 U.S. Open. So there's a theory that he was really just getting off of them or something. I don't know how true it is, and I don't know how much PEDs would have really helped Tiger. But anyway, this kind of changes the landscape a little bit because now, you know, you get caught smoking a little weed or doing a little blow, which John Daly claimed was a huge problem on the PGA Tour, which you're probably right about. Yeah, and you test positive now, it's going to be known, and this is going to affect, it's not going to affect their how much money they make on the course, but off course now, it's going to create a lot of problems. So, although I'm kind of intrigued to see, like, who's going to be the first positive drug test under this new policy. So we got Tiger Woods driving cars hopped up on Xanax and painkillers, which you got to watch out about. Like, that's why I don't want to kill him too much, because if he takes too many of those in that combination, it can kill you. So we wouldn't obviously don't want to see something like that happen. So he did say he's getting professional help, so good for him. I hope he really is. And, you know, he should probably fire his agent, too, because this guy just seems clueless with everything he does, Mark Steinberg. So we got Tiger Woods with a drug issue, which isn't good. We got a longtime player-caddy relationship breaking up, Mickelson and Bones McKay. And now we have a new drug policy, which we will have all the dirt on the guys who are testing positive for drugs. So should be some juice with that, at least.
Yeah, Mike, you support this new drug policy? Because it almost seems like a Captain No Fun movement. I don't know exactly how you would equate these kind of parameters with golf as you would with like other sports, because in other sports you have records and things, and I understand it there because like you're screwing around with the integrity of the game. But with golf, I never really got the impression that there was as much of an impact. But I'm not as keen on these things as you are. Do you think that this is a little? Is this something that needed to happen? I guess is my question.
I'm kind of indifferent about it. I guess because every other sport does it, you had to do it. Mm-hmm. That would be my take.
Yeah, I'm indifferent too. I mean, I just think that it didn't seem to bother me as much. Even if people were like on coke or what have you, it would not seem to bother me as much as it might in other sports for whatever reason. So I don't know. Maybe I'm kind of in the same boat. So let's go to John and any. What were we talking about here? Oh, yeah. So let's talk about the Travelers Championship coming up. I imagine you'll be in the building, so to speak, and tell us a little bit more about that and what else is in the golf world.
Yeah, well, before I talk about the Travelers, I'll add to Mike's list of things in the golf world. If you look up Grayson Murray on Twitter, he had quite the hot takes about police shootings recently. So you can explore that for yourself, and I bet you can assume what his stance was. So he might be in a little hot water over some things, but definitely some hot takes on those subjects.
John,
but,
who is Grayson Murray? I'm not familiar with him.
Yeah, he's like a rookie on tour, I want to say, but I don't think he's really done much. But he's definitely a PGA Tour player and has some hot takes on some issues.
The guy who fired his caddy mid-round and then like deleted his Twitter afterwards because he was getting killed for it?
It might be, because I think he just went private on his Twitter because of this most recent incident. So he seems like a guy that and no wonder why he can't make a cut if he's worried about all this kind of bullshit. It's true, Dave. If you look up his results, he's not very good.
Oh, wow.
But, hey, maybe if he should, you know, stop fooling around with his Twitter and, you know, focus on his golf game. But in any event, the Travelers Championship this week. I don't know who at Travelers is ponying up this kind of money, but, I'll take it because they have their best field, like, ever, as long as I can remember going to the event. And, you know, I've been going for at least 20 years now. So they have Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and Jason Day will be there as like the headline players. And then under that, you have your Justin Thomas, Bubba Watson, Russell Knox is the defending champion. So a very, very solid field for the week after the U.S. Open. And I actually, you know, while it kind of sucked to see McIlroy and Day not really be in contention last week, I think that'll make this week's tournament even better because they're going to be hungry to get out here and shoot some good scores. So really looking forward to it. I will definitely be there Friday to watch the action and probably one more day over the weekend. Not sure yet which one, but it should be a great event. I mean, when the fields are good here, the fans really come out, and especially around holes 16, 17, and 18. It's a great kind of arena to watch the action, and especially on 18, too. It's like a stadium seating kind of thing. I don't know if you remember, you know, watching it on TV, but it's a great tournament, and the course lends itself to a really exciting finish, so I definitely recommend tuning in on Sunday for the back nine. And then after the Travelers, you have a few more tournaments before the Open Championship. You have the Quicken Loans National, which is Tiger Woods' foundation's tournament, and if I remember, their fields have not been very good over recent years. I'm going to say the Travelers this week is going to be much better than the field at that event. And they're actually playing it at a new course this year. They had been playing it at Congressional, and then they've been moving it around. And now they're playing it at TPC Potomac at Avenel Farm. They used to play a PGA Tour event, I guess, on this course, the old Kemper Open, and that went to funk. But they renovated the course, and then now they're playing it, like I said, they renovated the course, and now they're returning to a PGA Tour stop with this event. So that'll be interesting to check out what they did with that. And then you have the Greenbrier in West Virginia. Last year they didn't have the event because of all that massive flooding they had after a rainstorm. So I'm glad to see they were able to, you know, repair that for the for the tour, and I guess hopefully for that whole community. And then you have the John Deere Classic, which, you know, it's not going to get much buzz. And then you get to the Open Championship, which, like we said, is at Birkdale. And, that was if I remember correctly last time it was here, Harrington won, but I want to say Greg Norman was, like, winning after three rounds. And it was the year.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And everyone thought, oh, here we go again. And with these, you know, older guys, it's going to be one of their last stands. And Norman just completely shit the bed on Sunday, which was pretty expected, I think. You know, unlike Watson, who was literally a good, you know, a par from winning the Open Championship, and he really should have, you know, going down memory lane, he really should have won that tournament, which is really, you know, sad when you look back on it. But, Norman was winning, and he fell apart. And I want to say Harrington won with a great, like, back nine, and I think Ian Poulter came in second, I want to say, but I'd have to go back and look. But Harrington definitely won, and the scores were pretty high. If I recall. So that should definitely be a challenge, and certainly looking forward to that event.
Cool. Thanks for the rundown, John. And now we give it to final thoughts and some other odds and ends. I did have another unrelated question to anything, but I'll bring that to the table in a minute. Mike, final thoughts regarding the golf as we head into the next major. Certainly a good time in golf. As John mentioned, there could be a pretty good tournament coming up with the Travelers. So we'll give it to you for any parting words before we move on to other things.
Well, it's interesting that just a couple years ago, we're sitting probably doing this show for 2015 covering Chambers Bay, and we're looking to the Open at St. Andrews that year, and we're seeing it as... it's this inevitable clash that was going to happen between Spieth and McIlroy, like this showdown for the ages that was going to happen. You know, so of course, going back, Spieth had won the Masters and the U.S. Open, and McIlroy had won the Open and the PGA in 14. And, you know, we all thought that was going to happen. And ever since then, you know, McIlroy got hurt, the fluke injury playing soccer. And Spieth had a chance to win the tournament, but then made the bogey on 18. You know, and then since then, we've had seven straight first-time winners of majors after looking like we were about to enter this era of, you know, maybe two superstars, taking all of these big tournaments for themselves. And it hasn't happened. It doesn't mean it won't happen. But it just goes to show how quickly the golf world can change and really just how deep and talented the current roster of stars are. Because, you know, if you're a little bit off, you're not going to win. I think that's pretty obvious. But seven straight first-time winners after, you know, two guys had won four tournaments, four majors in a row. So I just think it's interesting to see how much the narrative has changed in the last 2 years. So going forward, you know, who's the best player in the world? Well, the argument, you know, a few years ago was, well, is it, or 2 years ago, I should say, well, is it Spieth or McIlroy? But now, you know, Dustin Johnson's in that mix. Jason Day's in that mix. I don't know who else you might want to throw into that mix. And those guys, well, not Spieth, he's still really young, are almost... You know, it feels weird saying because, like, McIlroy is a year younger than me. Kepka is, like, 2 years younger than me. But it's just weird to see, like, players basically my age. And we can already say, like, they're veterans. And then you've got this, like, new crop of players coming in who are, like, 21, 22. And it's like, well, you would have graduated high school in 2011. It's like, it's just interesting to see how, you know, one generation kind of, like, goes from being the kids to being the veterans. And just, you know, how quickly the landscape can change. You know, I always said this about Tiger Woods. The big mistake a lot of people made in, you know, projecting this, that he was going to surpass Nicklaus, was golf can change, and it changes suddenly, and majors dry up suddenly. So, you know, just a reminder, you know, don't take anything for granted. For all we know, Spieth and McIlroy could never win a major again. I highly doubt it, but seven straight first-time winners. And I think if we had gone on this show 2 years ago and said, hey, in 2 years, Spieth or McIlroy will not have another major, you know, one of us would have said to the other, well, you're crazy. But that's what happened, and such is the nature of this sport of golf.
Absolutely. I mean, when you talk about where, and you use Tiger Woods as an example, when you talk about where he was 10 years ago, I don't think anyone perceived that he would go in such a dry spell. And you know, when he won on a hobbled leg the U.S. Open Championship at Torrey Pines, it seemed like he was just starting his career. But it turns out that could have been the ending. And, you know, for whatever the reasons were, you know, he missed out the next year. And it just so happened I was at Torrey Pines witnessing, you know, the course. And it really reminded me of that, like just how far golf has come in the 9 years since that tournament. It was a really great event. And I think golf is still in a really nice place now. I don't suppose that it has necessarily the ubiquity that we were hoping for back in 2008, but I still think it's a very, very fine sport. It's very healthy, and there's a lot to talk about when it comes to this game. And so hopefully, you know, our big names do step it up in years to come, or even weeks to come, and we see some pretty good action in the two forthcoming majors. Because it would really suck to, like, if we didn't have, like, some kind of group of guys that continue to be really, really good and contend for these majors. And I think we get it for the most part, but this was kind of a bit of a change of pace when you talk about the lack of star power this time around. But I think that we'll be okay going into the future. So let's go to John for final thoughts, and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, nothing much else to add. I think golf is in a good place. I mean, you know, the roster of talent on the tour is just unbelievable. I mean, going down to even, you know, the 150 to 200 level, I mean, really anyone can win. And it's pretty exciting to turn on a major and really never know what's going to happen. And we certainly would like those stars to come out and have these duels on each major. But, you know, you can't always get what you want. And there's going to be majors like we just saw where, you know, a guy kind of breaks out of the pack and sets a name for himself. And who knows, maybe Koepka will go on a run now. So you never know with golf. Like, and I think that was Mike's point. And I certainly agree with that. Things can change. I mean, like you said, Dave, who would have thought 10 years ago that Tiger Woods' career would essentially be over? I mean, I don't think anyone thought that. I mean, sure, maybe you would think his skills maybe would diminish a little bit and he would not win as much as he did. But, you know, his career is over. I mean, let's face it, in terms of winning on the PGA Tour anyway, maybe he'll play the Champions Tour. I don't know. But, yeah, so you know, it can change quickly and certainly a very interesting sport to follow. And we'll continue to do it as long as you'll have us, Dave. We appreciate it.
Well, it's really been a pleasure, guys. And I really thank you guys for re-ushering in the podcast season here in the city. My question that I was trying to come up with in the open before you guys called in was this. This is a question I'm going to send to the junk man. And I was thinking, what is the stupidest TV show that you can remember, for, like, either growing up or one you see now? Like, I don't think Junkie even watches TV, but what is, like, the stupidest show you've ever seen? Like, you saw it, like, this is the dumbest show ever. And I wonder, I just don't know, I don't actually even know the answer myself. Like, I don't even know my answer to that. But, you know, John, like, if you could come up with a show like that, is there anything that comes to mind?
So, Dave, that's a really good question. I mean, there's just so many out there.
Yeah, I know. That's
the I can't even think, like, off the top of my head which one I would be like, oh, that's just so awful. That, oh, man. That's a, Dave, I'll have to, I hate to leave you hanging, but I have to think about it. You can ask us on the, ask me on the next golf show. I'll have an answer for you.
All right. I'll remember to, I'll try to follow up on that. Mike, is there anything coming to your head at the moment?
Basically anything that tried to, well, except for Julia Louis-Dreyfus, she's had a good career afterwards, but basically anything that tried Jason Alexander or what's his name, the guy who played
Michael
Kramer
Richards.
As a lead character in a show.
Yep.
Yeah, Michael Richards. Another one coming to my head, even though it was successful, Two Broke Girls. It's like, why don't they just do porn? That'll make them all their money back. Like, you're opening a restaurant. Let's get real here. They're both two complete whores. Just do that. It's a more realistic show. That one was terrible. What was that show CBS did? Whitney. That was a terrible show.
Oh,
but,
wow.
This is like pretty much why... This is pretty much why I get the sports packages like all throughout the season, so that I can avoid watching shit like that.
Right.
So I'm not as in tune to bad TV shows, maybe as you are, or really most people are. I'm kind of a dinosaur when it comes to it.
Right, I hear you there. I mean, I know that growing up, I remember some pretty cornball shows. Pretty much a lot of stuff on TGIF used to be, you know, back in the 90s used to be pretty bad. But anything where I just simply said, this is the worst show on TV, I think the closest I can come is a couple. And one is Jersey Shore. That's when it was like hitting fever pitch. So I'm like, all right, guys, you guys are all talking about it. I'm going to go put on an episode. I couldn't even make it through the episode. It was so bad. Like, so that's probably the best answer I can come up with right now. That's a terrible show. I personally, maybe I kind of understand why it was popular, but... It was not for me, guys. It was not for me. So that's my answer for now. And then, John, I guess we'll have your answer in a couple months, or in a month or so.
Yeah, I mean, I watch a lot of good shows, so I can name a lot of those, but it's not like I don't remember putting on an episode and just, like, shutting it off because I'm like, oh, my God, that was just so horrible. So I'm sure there's a lot. But for now, I guess I'll nominate The Apprentice for various reasons. That was a pretty terrible show. I guess it was one of those ones that was so bad it was good, I guess.
I'd probably say that. Yeah, I think that's a good analogy.
Yeah, like a train wreck scenario, but you just couldn't take your eyes off of it, you know?
Yeah, I'd be happy with that guy going back to TV. That would be good.
Yeah, exactly.
all right, guys. Well, thanks again for joining me, and we'll do it again next month. And, all the best, and may you all have good golf scores as we go into the coming weeks of the summer. Fellas, it's been a pleasure. Have a good one.
Thanks. Take care, guys.
All right, fellas. Take it easy. And I'm going to send that question to the junk man now. So here we go. Let's do it. Thank you all once again for rejoining me. It's good to have me bring you back into my home. Have a great rest of your week. I was pondering the use of a podcast tomorrow, but I don't think that's going to happen. But stay tuned on Twitter just in case. We're at DidCow on Twitter. Our website is www.didcow.com. And on Facebook, you can look for us, DidCow, Dave in the City Out West. I'm Dave. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time.